everyone. I'm La.
And I'm Kathy.
And I'm Ashley.
And this is the Better Than Seven Sons podcast. Welcome to our first episode of season three. It's so good to be back, everyone. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. Well, our last episode was from April, season two. We wrapped up season two back in April. So that was a really long time ago. We're almost at the end of 2021. It's kind of hard to believe, but we're almost done with this year. But before we get started, let's do a really quick update for our listeners, just because it's been so long since they've probably heard from us. But what have you guys been up to since season two? Like, what's new? Any life updates you want to share?
Well, mine is easy because I moved in the summertime back to this Twin Cities where I grew up. So just been enjoying the city as an adult and not a child, because that's the last time I lived in the Twin Cities. So I've just been enjoying that, and I'm in a new role, a ministry role. So been learning different things with that, and yeah, that's basically it.
Mm-hmm. Now that you're an adult, do you find that you're discovering new things about the Twin Cities?
Yes.
Okay.
I think I have a much better appreciation for the history. Like, we went to a baseball game, like the Saints baseball game, and they have a museum in the Saints stadium. They're like not like the Major League Baseball, that's the Twins, but like we explored that and we just got to learn why they're called the Saints. Mm-hmm. And there's like religious layers to the Twin Cities, also like a lot of other things. And I've been exploring the History Museum, and that's actually where I got this cool book about like immigrant refugee stories in Minnesota specifically. So it's just like one of the unique things. Like, I've been wanting to hear, like, especially like Asian American stories, but like in a very like specific region, because most of those are usually outside. So it was super niche, and I tend to enjoy those things. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I too have switched ministry roles, and I have also since decided that I'm going to leave the organization that I work for in the springtime. And so that's a major life update for me, and I'm discerning what is next in life, which is difficult I think it's difficult at any point of your life at any age, but I think for me, like as a 37-year-old, it just feels like a lot. And so that's huge for me. I also did a lot of traveling, surprisingly, in the last 8 months, and that was just a real gift for me to be able to be with friends and family and just enjoy each other's company after a year of just being secluded. And then I also picked up running again, and so mm-hmm. I'm running regularly, and I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. For me, well, I guess this happened before we wrapped up season two, but I don't think I ever talked about it. But I started my academic sabbatical. So that I started that back in the very end of February. So I'm still in the midst of that because it's a 1 year academic sabbatical. So I'm in school most of the time, and that's most of what I do during my free time. But it's still nice because I'm not working. It's still pretty easy to slow down, and I think like the stress level of work compared to stress of school is very different, and I'm enjoying being in school and not working at the same time. I don't think that's ever happened to me. I think besides when I was, you know, younger, and I just went to school, but I think ever since college, like even in college, I was working while I was taking classes. So it's really nice to just study and learn and not work. Yeah, like it's still work, and sometimes I get tired and I feel like I'm working too hard on my sabbatical, but for the most part, I enjoy just being able to just learn. I like learning in general, so that's pretty much it. Well, thanks for your updates, but let's go right into season three. So this season, we're going to be focusing a lot more on faith. If you don't know already, we're all Christians and we have talked about our faith, I think, in almost every episode, but it hasn't totally been like the central part of our episodes. But this season, it'll probably be a bit more central to us. But yeah, we're going to talk about our faith and the ways that it intersects with us as Hmong Americans, as women. And so each episode, we'll be reflecting on different topics and just discussing what it means for us. So that's pretty much what this season's going to look like. We're really excited. We picked out a couple of topics that we're passionate about, that we love just talking about. And that's what the season's going to look like. So yeah, for today, if you've been listening to us for a while, you probably know that we love talking about our story and our narrative as Hmong people. We just think it's just important for us to be able to verbalize and share our story, because it's just a big part of who we are and how we understand the world. So part of our story as Hmong people is that we are displaced people. We have experienced a lot of displacement throughout history, and we don't have a country to call a home country. So we want to explore that and what that means for us as Christians, and how do we understand us, the world? How do we understand God with this as, you know, something that's part of our story and our identity? So to help with our discussion, we've looked through the Bible for just some things to help us think about this, and we were drawn to Acts 7, where one of the, I think he's a deacon, Stephen, and he angered some people because he was pretty outspoken against the temple. And I think he was outspoken against some of the Jewish customs. Some of the people who were angry at him were some Greek-speaking Jews who were not from Jerusalem, but they've migrated to Jerusalem. And I don't know, they were just really committed to the temple, I guess. So they throw some accusations at Stephen, and they bring him to the high priest, and he's sort of on trial right now. So Stephen gives this really long speech. And so when we were reading this, we were like, oh, I think this has something to say about us as displaced people. So we're going to be discussing from that. We'll probably talk and draw from all of Acts 7. So as you guys were reading this passage in Acts 7, what was something that jumped out for you that you want to bring up in our discussion today?
Something that jumped out to me in Stephen's speech is where he starts talking about Moses, and it's kind of like in the middle towards the end, but he spends quite some time on Moses. He goes into like detailed like Moses's life. He kind of like maps out Moses's life, but then also Israel's displacement journey. And I thought that was interesting, because I think compared to the other people that he did follow their lives, but he just spent a lot of time with Moses. And I think it made me realize that this is known as the Exodus, great displacement, right? They're moving out. And so and if you look at like Moses, he goes from Egypt to Midian to Egypt, crosses a sea, wilderness, then he's at Sinai, and then that's also considered the wilderness. So he also is just in a lot of different places figuring out himself and then also like getting in trouble, but also leading people, and also like uncertain and hesitant. And so I don't know, this part of Stephen's speech I feel like has a lot of personality. Well, personality to me, the way that it's being talked about. So yeah, that was something I found really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked how you named just all the different places that Moses had lived. And that's like a lot. It's like his whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, Moses has it hard too, because he has his identity crisis. But like the very people that like he is running away from, he has to lead. So I think that's like the other part too. And then even later on, right, when they're in the wilderness, they want to go back to Egypt too, and it's like, how could you like not as a leader like take that upon yourself and like internalize all that in like how you led them? And so yeah, I don't know, his is very fascinating. I would hate to be the leader that moves a lot of people at once. or does something very, very new.
Yeah. It's so hard because it's like these people end up not trusting you. And then it's like, I'll be like, God, I don't trust these people either. You know, like it's so. And then I think it would be an internal battle, honestly, for me with God as well. Like, I want to trust you, but it's so hard because of the displacements that I've experienced, but now also how I'm leading these people.
Yeah.
I would just have a lot of trust issues. I mean, I do now, but.
Yeah. How Stephen chooses to end this part about Moses is with the tent of testimony, but he also, at the right after that, sort of calls them out for kind of also how they, like, I guess how they are fixated or how they go to Moses. And so I think the irony is that Moses had a hard time, and I think he was actually still figuring out how to lead all these displaced people. But, like, you know, you fast forward, I don't know how many generations, to Stephen, and Moses is idolized as like this great leader, but it's like, oh, this great leader also like was figuring out a lot of stuff. And it was actually probably really hard to lead in this group of people. And so I just think there's a lot of irony in there in what Stephen's trying to point out about Moses too. So he also kind of humanizes him, I think,
As yeah, a leader. Like that. Yeah, because Moses is huge, right, in their history. I think he wanted to retell the story of Moses to them so that they actually understood what Moses is supposed to be about. Because maybe somewhere along the way that got distorted. And maybe that's what Stephen was trying to show them or call out from the audience that he's speaking to.
I think he does it really brilliantly.
Yeah, looking at Moses' story, because we talked about just how hard it was to lead the people and how hard it was for the people to kind of wander for a while because they knew there was a place they were supposed to land eventually, but they just weren't arriving there yet. So they were just in this like in-betweenness. But something that Stephen brings up is just the fact that like they felt like they needed a God to lead them, even though God was already leading them, but like they needed a God. So they wanted to build an idol. And so they make one. And it's just really interesting that Stephen includes this in the story of Moses. And I'm sort of wondering like what, you know, like what's significant about this part of the story and why Stephen felt like he wanted to include it. Because I think when I think about this in the context of what Stephen is doing right now, giving this speech to the high, you know, in front of the high priest, is there like a, I don't know, something here that Stephen is trying to communicate to them about idolatry? And because like they built the calf with their own hands, and then later on in verse 48, Stephen says the Most High doesn't live in houses built by human hands when he talks about how Solomon built the temple. And so I wonder if there's just like this connection there with like idolatry and the temple. And then in contrast to the human hands, Stephen quotes Isaiah 66, and in there, God says, didn't I make all these things with my own hands? So, I don't know. I just feel like there's just this connection between, like, idolatry, the temple, and, you know, God.
I mean, that is a good question. What makes us yearn so much that we would create something to symbolize or resemble the God we say we believe in because we, that yearning is so strong?
So, I mean, I think my theory is, like, in the wandering or in the wilderness, I think just wanting anything or having something of their own, there could have been, like, a fixation for something. I don't know, because I imagine you're living in tents or you're moving around so much, you're wandering, and, like, you want to get to this place that you've been promised. So what do you do to hold yourself over? I wonder if that's, I don't know. I'm trying to like jump into the shoes of like the Israelites. And that's all I can feel like I have. But I think that's enough. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, because God was with them throughout the whole process. And they saw God do a lot of miracles, right? But it just seemed like when things got hard, they started thinking about how good it was in Egypt again, right? And I don't know if for some reason they felt hopeless or they didn't feel like they could trust God. And so they're like, let's just create something for us to believe in.
Yeah, I also wonder if they maybe just gave up on that hope or promise of something and then just decided to settle.
Yeah.
Like if this is where we're going to say, let's build something for us, by us.
Or did they really just think that and believe that they were supposed to do that? I think sometimes we also really believe that, like, what we're doing is what God is calling us to do, even though it doesn't make sense in retrospect. Like, we don't ever know until retrospect, right? But when you're in the moment, especially because of the things that you've experienced as a people, it just seems right.
I think in some ways, the people were thinking back to Egypt and apparently forgot all the oppression that they've experienced in Egypt, where like it just seemed like Egypt was just better or something else was just better than what God was promising to them. And so I think, you know, like Stephen bringing this up and then obviously quoting stuff about the temple and the God's response when people were like, oh, we could build you a house or something. Was he like calling them out on them putting all their hope into the temple and not in God? Like the temple is their idol. And maybe like to contextualize, like maybe like what are some ways we idolize places or buildings or certain institutions or something?
I wonder with both your observations for like how it's connected to my observation of like how Stephen actually like, yes, he focuses a lot on Moses, but he actually, like, as from the beginning of chapter 7, he starts all the way to Abraham, right? Like, he starts, like, this is the story. Like, kind of like when our parents tell our stories, like, Bo-ta-u-a. I feel like that's kind of like what Stephen is doing. Like, starting from their main ancestor, this is what happened to Abraham, and this is what God has told Abraham about giving him land to him and to his ancestors and this promise. And so I feel like he recaps of like when this promise was initially given to their people. And I wonder if like similar to how stories are passed down to us, like this story was passed down from generation to generation in among their people. And I wonder if when it came down to like the generation of Moses' people, like they've inherited this story of like this is going to happen. And when they find themselves in the desert, it's kind of like, well, we've been told that it was going to be better. Or we've been told that it was going to be a good thing. And I wonder if this connects with your, you know, your question, La, about like idolizing and creating something. Because it's like God promised us this thing. And where is it? I don't know. Maybe we can create something out of our, you know, out of our own hands because that was promised to us, you know? And I feel like Stephen, he does a great job at like recalling all the different places where it didn't happen and where it was going to happen. And he's recalling almost every detail of the story. And so I wonder if, La, I think you talked about the distortion piece, right? Like, I wonder if he's like telling the whole story and he's like filling in the gaps where they probably don't remember or they probably didn't inherit or they, you know, like when you inherited this story of displacement. Stories are left out because of trauma. Stories are left out because of dissociation. And so I wonder if that becomes the like consequence or result of idolizing a place.
Okay. Yeah. Something that came to mind is that maybe because of whatever disruptions or trauma that they were still maybe dealing with, that they had to idolize the place that they were occupying to deal with that trauma, maybe.
And if that's like the story of your people and that you've inherited, it really is a piece of your identity. And I feel like that's, I mean, we can talk about this more in a little bit, but I feel like that's kind of been our experience as Hmong people, of like, where do we find our identity? Where, you know, we've been a people that has been very displaced.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been told this, or we've been told that, or this happened to us. And so bits and pieces of your identity and your story is tied to the different places that you've mm-hmm. been a part of, whether it was out of survival or out of your, you know, out of mm-hmm. your control, or purposely because of survival, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as we look at Act 7, you know, we get this story of people who've migrated and moved and have been displaced. And, you know, along the way, you know, Stephen does talk about how much God was involved and was with them in the process. Mm-hmm. And what does this actually mean for us as Hmong people, as Hmong Americans, or even us as Hmong Americans? Like, how are we reading this passage? How does our story influence what we see about God in this passage?
I think I'm stuck in how displacement, fixation, and then generations later, how that all comes about. So why I bring that up is because in Stephen's speech, he's mapping out the displacement, even the fixations or the idealization,
mm-hmm.
paralleling it with his current audience who are Greek-speaking Jews who are also displaced and fixated on the temple. So I think that's where I'm stuck. So I think my question, if I have a question,
mm-hmm.
I think is, does that idolization ever go away? Or is there like a, is it passed on generation to generation, that longing? Or not mean longing, because it's a... that wanting to make something for yourself, of your hands, or like mm-hmm. having pride in something, is that passed down? Because I don't have the words for it, but I do think that for Hmong people, I think that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to sit into like the Israelite story and like, oh, like if you've journeyed for so long, wouldn't you feel super fixated on this is our temple, this is ours?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is it also their sense of security? So I asked so many questions, but I'm just taking a stab.
It's almost like, what was the purpose for displacement?
Mm-hmm.
Because even God was telling them to move and to leave, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's never like super clear why God wants them to do that. So I feel like that's like the question I'm getting mm-hmm. a little bit from your comments, Ashley.
Mm.
Yeah.
Something that did come to mind, though, when I was thinking about this was that because when the Israelites were in the desert and they started thinking back to Egypt or maybe just thinking about settling where they were, I don't know. I wonder if they started to rely so much on the land or on Egypt or something that because they had that mentality, it would have made it very difficult for them to arrive in the promised land. So I wonder if like displacement plays a role in helping us not to idolize place so that we can actually arrive wherever it is that God is intending for us to be.
I think I like that a lot, Law, because I feel like that is a word not just for those who are displaced, but it's also a word for people who have power. Having land is connected to like having power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately an idolization, which is what you talked about mm-hmm. earlier, right? And so I feel like that's a really good word because it speaks not just to those who are displaced, and it doesn't justify people in power who are like, well, this is like, it's easy to be like, well, this is God's will for you, and then mm-hmm. to abuse that power, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that a lot because it's an invitation and a challenge to both people on the spectrum.
Yeah, it is very hard to comprehend why people own so much land and keep it to themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think there's some sort of idolatry to land or owning wealth or power or like security.
Which then makes us forget, right? Like this is what you said earlier a lot, like God was with them, God is with them. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like, you know, if when we read scripture, we often see like God was with them. God mm-hmm. is with us. God is with you, you know, in all the passages. And so I feel like if we are fixated so much on land, acquiring land, then it's easy to then create our own God, or it's easy to forget that God is with us. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to forget that like what he has is better than all the different places that we've been displaced to. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to necessarily hope for, I don't know, like we can have a yearning for something better, but like, and this might sound super cliche-ish, but it's like, I don't really even know if there's a place in this world that would ever satisfy us, because mm-hmm. it always is going to feel either better or worse. Especially, again, like if we contextualize it to who we are as Hmong people, it's like we never had a land or a home to ourselves. And so even though in America, it's like, yeah, our parents came here and our grandparents came here because they wanted a better life for us. But as Hmong Americans, we know that we also don't belong here. Mm-hmm. But going back to a place where our parents and grandparents grew up, that's also not home either. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if we don't remember that God is with us along the way, it's easy to like keep hoping for this thing that never comes, or to keep thinking that what was before is better.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question that I was thinking about too is for us as Hmong people, because we don't have that home country to go to, right? Like we don't have a country full of mostly Hmong people, because even like, you know, our parents came out of Laos, but my perception of Laos is in a way like maybe there's a sense of home there for our parents, but then it always felt like it didn't belong to me, or that was just a land that we had occupied for a little while or something. So it doesn't quite like have that home feeling for me, which makes sense because, you know, I'd never been there or I wasn't born there or anything. But anyways, in what ways, or have we attached ourselves to the U.S. in some ways? Because this is like the only land we know, we were born here, in a way where we idolize the U.S. Like, do we see that in us at all? I don't know. Maybe it's not a thing, but I wonder that about us.
The more we talk, I think that displacement is so vulnerable. And it's easy to like attach yourself to something or somewhere. And I think for Hmong people, I've seen it like, yeah, US, I think, well, Hmong Americans, we can't, that's all we know. So we may have, I have an attachment here for multiple reasons. But I do think you can also have an attachment to, like, where your parents grew up, or my grandparents grew up, because that's maybe, like, the most tangible, like, thing that you know. But I also wonder if you can, this may or may not be specific to us, but I guess I can kind of see it in Steven's speech, too, but, like, attachment to a event. And I think for Hmong people, it's... The American war in Vietnam. For me, as a Hmong American, that's how I explain why I'm here in America. Yeah. Or why I exist. That's the only thing that everyone else is aware of that I can draw to. And the impacts of what of our status in America is because of that war. And so maybe for us, it could be like more event or situational. But then that's also a land thing too, and a place thing. So, and wars are very complicated.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, I think yes, I agree with everything that Ashley has said, because I think that, especially for Hmong Americans, because that is our experience. What I said earlier about how we actually kind of don't really fit in the U.S. either, and so we don't. Like, it, depending on where you are in your identity development and your understanding of recent America and how that impacts you, I feel like it's easy to also want the American dream, to want to assimilate whether it's out of survival, whether it's out of like, well, this is why our parents came here. Like, I feel like it goes back to like, do we know the full story, right? Like, do we know all the ins and out of the full stories? What parts of the story do we remember? Do we hold on to? Do we retell others? Do we tell ourselves? And part of that is like, I think knowing the whole story and remembering the whole story and telling the whole story, I think it does something in us that we need spiritually, emotionally, mm-hmm. and mentally. Because then it also reminds us, I hope it reminds us that God has been with us as well. Otherwise, it's easy then to only fixate on certain pieces of the story, which is, again, why I love this chapter and love that, like, Stephen starts all the way from Abraham and, like, recalls from way back then and takes him through the whole story.
Yeah, Kathy, you talk about knowing the whole story, and it just made me think, because I was thinking about what Ashley said, too, because you talk about Hmong people potentially having, like, or Hmong people idolizing maybe the war that mm-hmm. led to us being mm-hmm. here. I might disagree with that slightly, in that I think we fixate on that because that's where we think our story begins. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's the same in Acts 7, mm-hmm. where Stephen's like, your story doesn't begin after Moses, mm-hmm. but your story actually begins, you know, way before that.
Wow, that's
so good. Like, he chronicles this like story of migration, right, in their history. And I think for us, it's like, we might need to remember that too. We didn't just, we're not just about that one migration or one, you know, movement from Laos to Thailand to here. But we have a pretty long history of moving around. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that, like knowing that story, that I think is supposed to help us not to idolize the places that we live. Because it's possible that the places we live are very temporary. They're not permanent. Something that came to mind too was that because Kathy, I think you named the American Dream, and I think other things that I could probably think about is just some of the anti-immigration, anti-refugee attitudes that some Hmong people do have, which is that should be the last thing, right?
Yeah,
that we should be thinking, because it's not like anybody wanted us here, you know, when we were coming,
yeah,
right? And because we have that history, like if we remember that history, I think we're gonna be a lot more welcoming to people because we understand their story. And so that's what I'm thinking about. I'm just like connecting like what Stephen's talking about to like our history and how we view our own history, because we can only think to the war.
And then when we think to it, like, do we remember all parts of the war? Like the different perspectives, or who has told us about the war and what to think about the war. Yeah, so I'm connecting back to like what I was talking about, like Moses has the most personality in Moses' speech, but I also wonder if he also then just also reframed everything that they also remembered about Moses.
Yes. So like, what do we need to reframe, or how does the story that we know of about the war, how does that need to be reframed?
We've talked a lot about like knowing the story, the full story, and I don't think we need to like pretend that it doesn't impact us, right? Like I feel like we're not saying like knowing the full story will help us like not idolize. Like, I think, I think God wants us to acknowledge and to wrestle with God. Like, this is hard and we don't know what to do. And I think God, by doing that, it'll also help us remember that, like, okay, God is with us. What does that really look like in real time? And that's wrestling with it. It's like, this is a story that we've inherited, and it makes us feel horrible, and it feels a lot, and it's heavy, and God, help us deal with this, right? Like, I feel like we're not trying to say, if you remember it, it's not going to make you idolize, or it's not going to, you know, you're not going to be this or that. I don't think that's the purpose of Stephen's, you know, but I think we should be honest with the hard parts, and I think that's also going to help us heal, right?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind is that there's so much we lose when we move, we migrate, or displace, but we never lose God.
That's what Stephen said at the end of his speech. Basically.
Did he?
I mean, basically.
Yeah. Or even like, God's like, I'm already here.
Mm.
I love that this passage is making us dig deeper into these things, because I feel like the things that we're saying about God always being with us and how we shouldn't be tied to a place so that it doesn't become an idol. Like, I feel like that is what we're taught in church, and those are the Christian things to say, right? The now and the not yet. But I think it's harder to live out. And mm-hmm. I think that, especially as Hmong American Christians, like, I wonder what it would look like for us to press into that, knowing our own stories. Because, like, if I'm honest, it might not be like the United States of America that I idolize, but it's like, God, I want to have stability. You know, mm-hmm. like, I want to be able to have a home. I'm a single woman, and it's harder financially, you know? So it might not be like a piece of land that I'm going to buy, but I think if I'm honest, it's like, God, I don't want to live paycheck to paycheck. God, I don't want to just rent a small apartment for the rest of my life. I don't want a mansion. So I think if we're honest, like, it's easy to talk about these theories and to talk about like, oh yeah, that makes sense, because that is the Christian way. But I wonder for us, the invitation is like on the daily basis of like, how do we then wrestle with what I just said? You know, like, God, I want stability. What does that actually look like without idolizing it?
Yeah. Can I add a word to your stability? Yeah. I've been pondering safety. Why I say safety is, I think, because of the repercussions of the war, I think there's like a, sometimes I feel like there's like, you want to feel safe. Like, when you're entering into a new space, and you're like, you want mm-hmm. to feel safe, be safe, knowing that like you are your presence is there. And so I wonder if like that is also, that could be true for Hmong people too. Like, will I be safe here? Will people see me? Will people like, they don't have to like love mm-hmm. me, but will I be safe around these people mm. in this space, in this place and land? Because if you go before the war, like, I wonder if we had that same issue too. Like, are we safe here? Yeah. Like, moving like place to place, like going from China to like going south. And like, mm-hmm. do we ask that question a lot? Can we stay here, be safe mm-hmm. for a little bit? And so, I don't know. That can become like an idolization or a fixation or attachment. But I also think that's also where God can teach us something in our displacement too. Mm. And I'm not going to say like, oh, be resilient, or like, we can find our safety.
Yeah.
But I think that we have to, I think our bodies have to live it. Because I think mm-hmm. one of the things I'm processing is that you can't just intellectually convince yourself that you're going to be safe.
Yeah.
Like, you have to experience
mm-hmm.
displacement, and you have to experience then what safety is for any reconciliation or healing
mm-hmm.
to be done. I don't think our parents or our grandparents, you know, maybe they've like gone through that process, but I think there's also like, if things are passed on and if that fixation is passed on, we also too have to go through that experience of feeling safe or finding mm-hmm. safety or security and trusting God through that.
Yeah, I feel like in a way we need displacement to actually know that God is with us. Because it's like, we can go into the farthest place that we think we can go and God is still there, or the places that we think God can't be, but God is there. And so I feel like some kind of displacement in our lives is what shows us that God is actually present. And I wonder if it's that presence, that knowledge of God's presence, is what gives us safety, right? Like, it's not so much about everything is just going to be fine now. You know, like, God's with you, so everything's fine. But I think it's like, it's more like God's with us so that we can actually persevere in this thing that we're experiencing, this displacement that we're experiencing. I feel like we need to know that. So it's not just like, just trust God. God's with you. I think it's more about like I feel unsafe because I'm in this different place, strange place. But this knowledge that God is with me is giving me the sense of safety that I can be here and survive here.
I don't know. I feel like it is both of what you said. Mm-hmm. I think it is some type of knowledge and some type of experience. I think it takes both. And I think that's why it's difficult, right? Like you can't intellectualize your way into like experiencing God, but it's experiences are also accumulated. And so you can't solely only like rely on experiences. But I think what's hard is that you need both, and that needs to be aligned somehow in order for you to like have that sense of peace, like similar to what Stephen had at mm-hmm. the end of his life, right? Like mm-hmm. I want to know what type of knowledge and experience Stephen had to have enough peace about what was about to happen to him, enough to say, what did he say? Lord Jesus, accept my life, you know, don't hold this sin against them. Like, what type of knowledge and experience with God for you to have enough to say that? I don't know.
Yeah, because faith isn't blind. Isn't like, I don't know anything about God, but I'm just going to believe this about God. Like, I think there is something mm-hmm. that we need to know about God so that we have faith that that's going to happen.
Yeah, Kathy, I think the tensions that you're feeling with displacement, I think, yeah, I feel it and I get it. And I think, well, definitely displacement isn't supposed to be or feel easy, but I think there's invitations for a lot of different things. And there's not one thing. I think that's one of the things I'm wrestling with displacement, is that there's so many things. And I think for me, I've kind of found in my displacement, discovering like what is safety, or asking the questions of what is safety. And I think another one is also like, what is rest in displacement? Like going, like, I don't know, when you're moving, or when you have like those feelings of displacement, I just think you're overworking. You're working so hard to be part of something. And I think I've always been wondering why do I feel that? But I'm just like relating to what you said, but displacement, it's not fun. It's hard, but I think there's opportunities to, especially for me, to grow in a different way than maybe others might.
Your resting thing stuck out to me because I feel like in displacement, there's no rest, right? There's just no rest for people who are displaced, because you're just, you know, there's so much change and you're just figuring it all out. And it just makes me think about how the Israelites receive the Sabbath while they're displaced. You know, and just how like significant that must have been.
Yeah, I think also with that, another part of that intrigued me in the passage was Stephen's speech, is where he quotes, "What kind of house will you build for me, says the Lord, or where is my resting place?" Which infers that like God rests. Then like we are also invited to also rest with God. So in some ways, if God can rest in anywhere, in a place, then also we can rest there too. So I think the invitation is that we can rest because God rests too, even in displacement. Because if they're given those laws, or that the law of the Sabbath in the displacement, God can dwell and rest there. I think that's God's presence with us. And so, yeah, I feel like we can rest.
Yeah, Ashley, I really like that we're able to rest, even if we might feel like we can't because we're displaced, or, you know, our minds are focused on trying to survive. But in the midst of that, God invites us to rest because God rests as well. All right. Well, that was a great conversation. We are out of time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope that you were able to receive something from this. We do encourage you to read through Acts 7 and let us know what you think. When we read it, we were able to just see a lot of our own story in this, of our history of displacement and movement. And you know, when we read X7, it was just something that we really resonate with. So we hope that it is something for you as well, too, as you read it and as you look at it from the perspective of a Hmong person and, you know, with our history and our narrative of displacement. So, yeah, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for our next episode.